Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnrepublicbroadcasting.org. It is the police holding cell for free speech. The police, when they round you up, they'll put you in a holding cell, and we'll be speaking freely as we await internment into a FEMA camp. So go to National Bugle. No. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. You know, here's the thing. Republic Broadcasting Network is RBN. National Bugle Radio is NBR. And that gets me all confused. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send shekels. Go to nationalbugle.com, download the kosher certified app, and live a non-kosher certified lifestyle. Okay, today is the carjacking episode. But which carjacking are we talking about? Are we talking about the carjacking where the 13 and 15 year old African queens?
So you were just telling me about that before the show. That's actually news to me. I've been extremely busy with other stuff with life, and you were
you've been busy with other carjackings. But yeah, it happened a week ago, and Daily Stormer didn't get to it until I think late Friday. So, you know, we've only started talking about it this week. This is the first, So, anyway, but what about your carjacking?
Yeah, well, so let me back up a little bit. What I would recommend people do that can afford it is to buy some local land where you are, especially if you're white, because they don't want that. And preferably out of the city, at least it was preferably for me, but... any way around, but buy an acre of land or such. But so that's what I did. I bought recently bought a large tract of land outside a metro area, and so it's a beautiful piece of land, and it's I've been showing a lot of people, you know, a lot of my friends and acquaintances the land. And coming back yesterday from showing a friend my property, it was getting dark. And so we're on a state highway, not in city limits or anywhere. We're getting close to the freeway. So there's a truck stop probably half a mile away. You can see the lights. And out of nowhere, there's a black man standing in the middle of the road. And I'm going highway speeds. So I slam on brakes and just about hit him. But and he's waving his arms at me in the middle of the road. And then power walking towards the car, and
Power walk.
Well, swinging arms fast, and I'll just say walking like Sasquatch.
Well,
for lack of a better term.
Walking like who's the Irish UFC fighter? You know,
Conor McGregor.
Conor McGregor, is it that kind of walk?
Yeah, right. Only fast, big strides. And I mean, he would have had to take two or three more strides before he got to me, because I was pretty close. But anyway, I just had to floor it. I literally had to floor it and get in the other lane. There wasn't anybody coming, but I had to get into the other lane, oncoming lane, and to avoid him. And I'll be straight up honest. I was ready to hit him. Like, if he would have gotten the other lane, I don't care. I was just going to keep going. I'm not gonna die, you know, at the hands of some crazy psycho black man in the middle of the road, not even in the city.
What are the risks? What's the odds of actually dying in a carjacking by a random black person?
Probably high, depending on where you are.
Uh-huh.
Fairly high.
Has it ever happened before? Wait a minute.
That's never happened to me before, ever.
No, but I mean, has it ever happened to the car? Well, the carjacking, I mean, because I'm being facetious, because it happened with these 13 and 15-year-old girls who wound up killing the Pakistani guy whose car they hijacked.
You know, they probably thought that he was white, too.
Well, I mean, you know who he looked, who was a dead ringer for? You remember back in 2016 when Hillary Clinton invited a Gold Star father? What was his name? His son had died fighting for Jews in Iraq, and this guy. He was very hostile to Trump because Trump doesn't represent our values the way his son, who died for Jews fighting in Iraq, did. Uh-huh. Do you remember who I'm talking about? That Pakistani guy?
No, I'm sorry.
Well, a lot of the listeners know who I'm talking about.
Okay.
And when I saw this on Anglin's site, and he had that Pakistani guy, he had the guy who got killed, the Uber Eats driver. He had his picture, but in the picture he was wearing a suit and tie and maybe some sort of sash over his suit, and he looked just like that guy who spoke at Hillary's convention. But at any rate, I interrupt you.
No, that's fine. That's all that happened. That's my lovely story of diversity. It happened last evening or last night. So.
Well, okay. Well, that was an exciting episode. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, thankfully, this was about 2 hours from my land, so this was quite a ways away. We were heading back to the nearest metro area, so I'm not going to have to worry about any diversity out my way.
And, you know, this is the thing. So we keep... Oh, all right, so recently I was talking to... I think I said this to Richard Carey when we were recording a show a few hours ago. And was that a few hours? I guess it was last night. And I have a friend that I was visiting recently from my school days, from junior high and high school. And he's a smart guy, PhD. And yet he was, you know, talking about black crime. He was saying, well, you know, we can't judge them because they lack opportunity and, you know, they face this oppression. And I said, look, look at the guys we went to school with. We went to school together. They had the same educational opportunities we did. They were in the same classrooms as us.
Yeah, if not more.
Right, right. You know, because they had affirmative action getting into college if that's what they wanted to do. If they had at all the wherewithal or the disposition to do so. They had, and this was, you know, we're boomers, so this was back when actually blacks had daddies at home too, and they weren't interested in, they were disruptive, they were shaking people down for lunch money, my friend got shook down, and I said, don't you actually remember your own childhood? Don't you actually remember your own interactions with these people? And you know. Yeah, you're indoctrinated. I was indoctrinated, you know, because the indoctrination is very pervasive. But we got to wake up and smell coffee.
Yeah, that reminds me. I'll tell you a little story about. I think this was my first racial awakening. Whenever I was in first grade, here in my town, we have. I went to Catholic schools, and we have a fairly significant Vietnamese population. Mm-hmm. So they did a mass in Vietnamese once a week, and there were lots of Filipinos and Vietnamese that were in the school. And I remember, you know, keep in mind, this is first grade, you know, and me and a friend just somehow were making fun of this Asian guy, you know, doing the ching chonga chang and what have you. And boy, there was a teacher that came up to us and started smacking our wrists and, like, going to extreme lengths to tell us that everybody is equal. And, I mean, I had an epiphany right then as to, like, well, if everybody really is equal, how come you're having to scream at me to tell me this? You know, I should be able to see this. And it was an epiphany when I was in first grade that there's something wrong with this picture.
You know, I had a Chinese friend whose father was from Boston, a Chinese American from Boston's Chinatown, and his mother was was Chinese, I guess, born on the mainland, but then went with Chiang Kai-shek's armies to Taiwan, and I guess she was friends with Chiang Kai-shek's granddaughter or something like that, and the father was a government worker, and so at some point had gone through Taiwan and brought home a very lovely Taiwan or Chinese lady. And so My friend, he was Chinese, and honestly, his mother was really, really nice. And not only did she teach us how to eat with chopsticks and stuff like that, but she used to take us bowling, and she was really good at bowling. And she was kind of very protective. She'd drive her sons to school, but if we got to their driveway by the time she was leaving, then she'd give us a ride to school. Everybody loved her. Anyway, we would joke. We would joke about our friend, and the mother always put grease in his hair, and he'd say, "Well, it's because I'm Chinese. We have to slick our hairs back because we're Chinese." Like, oh, okay. So we'd make jokes, and nobody minded. Nobody minded. There was a Filipino guy who moved into the neighborhood too, and everybody liked him. He was very, very popular. Everybody liked him. We all wanted to be his friends because he was pretty cool. But we'd still joke. And you look back. I was re looking recently at a Rat Pack concert. What were they playing? I think they were playing, Birth of the Blues. I think that they were doing Birth of the Blues, and it was Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, and for whatever reason, Johnny Carson, who's taller than you would think, and also sings extremely well, which surprised me, and then Sammy Davis Jr. And the orchestra was being led by Quincy Jones, right? And Sammy Davis Jr. was like making jokes, and he was saying, "No, that's Quincy. I'm Sammy. I know we all look alike." He's saying stuff like that, and everybody was laughing. And it wasn't hatred.
Yeah.
Make jokes, and it's not hatred.
A lot of black comedians will make jokes, say about blacks not being in the pool, and stuff like that. And blacks find it funny, and same with whites. Like Jeff Foxworthy has the whole thing, like, you might be a redneck if. Like, most of those are, if not all of them, are directed towards white people. And hey, a lot of them are funny, big deal. So, yeah.
Yeah, funny, funny. And I make jokes at my expense, people, and if people make jokes at my expense, then fine. Whatever.
Well,
As,
I mean,
like
jokes are funny to.
I mean, there's being mean, but being mean and making jokes are two separate things. They can overlap, but they're two separate things.
Yeah, exactly. Context.
Exactly. Now, so the context, though, let's get back to the subject at hand. There's a lot of black crime, and Tucker has been pointing out it's been rising, and big surprise after the events of last summer with George Floyd, whose trial's going on right now, Derek Chauvin's trial of the his racist murder of George Floyd, when he was actually just trying to save his life because George Floyd had a was having a heart attack after ODing on fentanyl. And what were the cops supposed to do? The guy was clearly whacked out, right?
They were waiting for EMS, right?
They had called EMS because he was in excited delirium, which if and the police manual says, and they use not Chauvin, but the arresting officer, the other white guy, because there was two white guys, a black guy and a Oriental guy, who were the four arresting officers, and the other white guy whose name slips my mind, he said, "We have him. He's in excited delirium." And excited delirium is in the manual, it says it is typically brought on by drug overdoses. And the what do? Well, you call the EMS, and then you restrain the individual in the recovery position so that they don't ha die from a heart attack. And that's all in the training manual. So I mean, that's what was going on. The cops weren't being racist; they were being respectful. But what were they supposed to do? Were they supposed to let him drive off while he's tripping?
Yeah. Well, he want yeah, like you said, he has to be put on the ground, or they said, "You want to go on the ground?" He's like, "Yeah."
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't just let him. They couldn't let him. He was behind the wheel when they arrived. They couldn't let him drive off. So, I mean, he had to be apprehended. So, what are they going to do? I mean, even they can't let him walk off. He's somebody that we certainly know in retrospect has a very long and violent criminal history. Whether he would have committed violence that day, who knows? But had he, then the police would be to blame. No matter what the police do, they would be to blame. And it's not like I'm the biggest shill for the police, but what were they to do? And they did nothing, absolutely nothing wrong. But so this has been used, A, to defund the police. So their police have been demoralized. They've been resigning from the force. They are being budgeted less money, so they have less resources. And also, you know, just like the Ferguson effect, when society is coming down on them, they just police less. So you've got less policing out there. And then you've got blacks who are being incited by the Jewish media. And it is a Jewish media. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be mean to the Jews, but it is. I mean, if you're going to dominate the media, then you have to be able to put up with people pointing out that the media is Jewish.
Yeah.
And they're being incited and with very predictable results.
Yeah, speaking of Jews, I was thinking earlier on in the week that who was it that said that intermarrying would be their undoing? Was it one of the rabbis in Israel?
It's a lot of, I mean, a lot of Jews have pointed that, have a lot of Jews have decried intermarrying, including, I believe, representative from Florida, Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
And what do you think about their Supreme Court ruling in Israel that is defining the law of return as anybody who can convert? So that means any African or Muslim that decides they're all of a sudden a Jew, just like you can be with you know, any other religion, Christians, right? Because Jews are the only one with a DNA linked to their religion. But the Israeli Supreme Court has ruled that that's not the case, that anybody who converts to Judaism is eligible for the right of return.
Right, but here's the thing.
And I don't think that'll stand for long, though, honestly.
No.
It is a red pill, or a white pill, rather, but...
No, it's not what it seems.
Yeah.
It's not what it seems. So, because there had been DNA testing going on, all right? Now, who gets to decide, who actually controls immigration policy in Israel? And this was a bargain that was struck by the atheists who founded Israel, like David Ben-Gurion. It was a deal struck between them and the religious Orthodox Jews. And the religious Orthodox Jews were not Zionist, and they weren't on board with this. And there was a deal struck with at least some of the Orthodox, because there are some Orthodox who still don't accept Israel because they think, you know, the Messiah actually has to come back before Israel can be established. And the deal was that the Orthodox rabbinate would oversee family policy, and family policy includes conversion and includes deciding who is a Jew. So the Orthodox rabbinate wants to decide who's a Jew based on their traditional rabbinic law or halakhic law, which, you know, by the way, Ivanka Trump, she must have had an Orthodox conversion, so maybe she would count. But all these other people who had Reform conversions or what, they do not count as Jews in Israel, right? They don't count as Jews in Israel. They can come, you know, with their spouse, but they don't count as Jews unless they've undergone an Orthodox conversion. And, you know, Africans aren't going to – the Orthodox rabbis are not going to just accept anybody. So they have control over it, and that's how it's always been. And you've had people like a group of blacks from Chicago back in, I think, the late 60s. They declared themselves Jews, and they went to Israel, and they've been sitting in Israel ever since. And they're allowed to live in the Negev Desert, but they're not considered Jews. So that's the thing.
I believe that's being challenged too. I don't think it's going to stand because the
Ashkenazi.
Under Netanyahu, I remember reading the quote. I don't remember who exactly it was, but the guy is obsessed with DNA. His whole cabinet is obsessed with DNA.
Netanyahu.
And Jews in general too.
Okay. So, well, hey, we're going off to the break, but we'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Okay, we are back, and we're talking about the ruling in Israel that Israel can't use DNA to determine who's a Jew, but it goes back to the default, which is letting the Orthodox rabbis decide who's a Jew.
Yeah,
Netanyahu's obsessed with DNA.
Yeah, and it's being challenged. I don't think it'll stay around, this new law. But anyway, it was interesting.
Well, it's kind of a reversion to the standard before DNA testing. So here's the thing. I've talked about this before. If you live near Orthodox Jews, especially like Chabad Lubavitch, who is always going out and recruiting people that are halakhically Jewish, they go out, they are very active and aggressive trying to recruit people who are even just one quarter Jewish, provided that one grandparent was the maternal grandmother. If they can identify that you are that your maternal grandmother was a Jew, even if the rest of you is just something weird, they will recruit you because that's their mission. And so is that as, is that going to be as purifying to the Jewish genome as DNA testing? No, but I mean, that's basically what's worked throughout the years. So the Chabad Lubavitch, for instance, they are willing to accept some genetic water under the bridge. Now they will recruit these people, but like somebody who is not Jewish looking and not, you know, half Jewish or less than half Jewish, they'll be recruited, but they're not going to get into a leadership position, but they'll be recruited.
Yeah, it almost seems like you were saying, like it almost works out better for them that way, because the rabbis can be more selective in who they think is, you know, should maintain their traditions. And that may not necessarily be the case with DNA, because like you just mentioned, you could be, you know, a quote atheist and not even believe, or just a Jew by DNA and still get in and not even care, you know, about traditions. But anyway.
Do you know Jimmy Kimmel?
Unfortunately, yes, I know who he is.
He used to be funny, and he started off in the 90s.
Saturday Night Live, right?
No, he started off with Ben Stein on Win Ben Stein's Money.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't know that.
Ben Stein was a Jew.
He's a hardcore Zionist.
He's hardcore. He was, as a young man, his father was one of Nixon's economic advisor, and as a young man, he got a speech writing job for Nixon, not Agnew.
Yeah.
Nixon.
Yeah.
And you know, then he's a lawyer. He's involved in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And he
has this, economist.
I guess he's an economist / lawyer, but he does have a law degree. And of course, he wrote an article that I quote from time to time. You're damn right, the Jews run Hollywood. What of it, right? So that's Ben Stein. But at any rate, I'm talking about Jimmy Kimmel. And Jimmy Kimmel was his sidekick. There was Win Ben Stein's Money. It was kind of funny. It was like Jeopardy, but the object was to beat Ben Stein. Ben Stein's good at trivia.
Yeah, and all the questions were set up for him.
Well, they probably were set up for him, but he didn't always win. And Jimmy Kimmel read the questions. He was young, and he wasn't fat yet. Now, after that, Jimmy Kimmel, he did The Man Show for a while with Adam Carolla, which was lewd, but it was also funny. And then he did something on Comedy Central called Crank Yankers, where he did crank phone calls. Now, that's where I'm getting at. So he did a crank phone call to a rabbi, and he was saying he was going to get married to a Jewish girl and needed to convert, and what would be involved. And the rabbi was going along with it, and he was saying, well, you got to do this, and you got to do that, and you got to – and then, of course, there's the circumcision. Circumcision, what's that? Well, we cut the foreskin off the penis. Well, then Jimmy Kimmel starts making all these vomiting sounds. And says, oh, okay, I can do it. And then what? Well, then you're going to be before a panel of rabbis. Rabbis, oh, and he starts throwing up again. Three rabbis, he's throwing up even more. So that was Jimmy Kimmel, and it was kind of funny. I don't know where I exactly going with this, but the Orthodox are willing to accept some genes, but that's the thing. Their gig, the Orthodox, their gig isn't in genetic testing. Their gig is in you know, their strength is in the Torah and the Talmud and being the experts in it and the arbitrators of it. And so genetic testing was really a threat to the Orthodox rabbinate's domination of Israeli family law, which is extremely important.
Right. What do you know about the Kabbalah?
Not a whole lot, honestly. I mean, it's like mysticism and magic and whatnot.
Yeah, and there's a lot of... There's a lot of stuff in there similar to the Talmud, I'm finding. Like, things say, like, you have to hire a goyim to work on a Saturday because Saturday is when they rest, or the Sabbath, or... anyway, I just wondering.
Okay. Now, all right, well, we are up on the break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite 7 herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with
Extendivite. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future. So we are back. So here's the thing. You got all these people, like my friend, who in their life they have experienced, you know, black crime or anti-white racism or whatever, and yet somehow are still going along with the programming. So have you had any other experiences kind of like this where you've been?
Yeah, not in a car. I was walking in my town one time, and I had just to a gas station. I had some drinks I bought, and there was a couple blacks that were hassling me. And I just screamed at him, like, to F off as physically loud as I possibly could. And I think they both thought I was a psycho. So then they just left me alone. Was it Cecil Rhodes that said, like, you have to make sure that you don't keep them on your equal? They're like children and you can't fraternize with them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to comment on that. But.
It doesn't have to be him. There's a lot of people that have mentioned that, but that's what I was thinking.
And in general, I mean, so Mark Twain, he was friends with Frederick Douglass, but viewed Frederick Douglass as his equal, but didn't really view blacks as white equals. And then you got like Frank Sinatra, whom I mentioned before, who was extremely protective of Sammy Davis Jr. and, you know, he would not stay at a hotel that hassled Sammy Davis Jr. or in any way. But on the other hand, he was known for racist remarks which would sometimes come out in the public. You know, he was in Las Vegas and there was some card dealer who was Oriental somehow, and he said, I can't understand the word you're saying, or whatever. I don't know what it was. But so you got that. But I've had a bunch of experiences. I think one that I've said on the program before about walking through, when I was a teenager, walking through Atlantic City, and I guess it was right after gambling had been legalized, and I lost my money. I had a little bit of money left over, but I lost my money in that first casino they had, whatever it was called, Raffles or whatever. And I was trying to get to Brigantine Island, and I was trying to walk to Brigantine Island because I did have a couple dollars, and I knew an Italian restaurant where I could get a plate of spaghetti. And so I'm walking through, if you've ever played Monopoly, that's based on the streets of Atlantic City. And those first couple of streets that you get to, I mean, the lower the price of the rent, like Mediterranean Avenue, Baltic Avenue, which have $2 rent, those are black slums. Oriental Avenue too, which is $6 rent. But yeah, these are black slums. And so I was walking on, I don't know, the Baltic or Mediterranean, it was one or the other, and these kids just started throwing rocks at me. And I looked around, and they're, you know, the parents were sitting out on the porch, nobody was saying anything. And I thought, well, I could run, but what are the odds that I'm going to outrun every black in this neighborhood? So maybe I'll just pretend nothing's happening, and I'll just keep walking and hope for the best, which is what I did, and things worked out okay. But, you know, I've had plenty of experiences like that. I've turned down a wrong street, and all of a sudden I'm in a cul-de-sac in a black area, and they're coming out and telling me to, you know, get the whatever out. You know, I've been robbed and that, all that stuff. And it hasn't caused me to hate blacks, but it does cause me to be a little bit wary. I had one experience where, before I quit drinking. So I guess I was a teenager, and I was with my friends, and we're going to a bar or a nightclub or whatever, and we're going into the parking lot. And it was dark, and there was a couple of blacks who were saying, oh, yeah, back up this way. We'll show you where to park. And, like, I guess I had already had a couple of drinks, and I was just like, oh, okay. And then Eddie in the back seat is like, we're getting set up, man. And he said, leave. And I said, well, okay, if Eddie says get out of here, I'll get out of here. And on the way out, then we saw a whole bunch of blacks coming out of the shadows, and we were getting set up. So, you know, people that have these experiences, and yet for the next, you know, 25 years or whatever, I drank the Kool-Aid of, it's they're economically disadvantaged and this and that, and there's really no difference. But really, there's a difference, and it doesn't mean you hate. It doesn't mean you want to oppress.
No, it just means you want to stay safe.
you want to stay safe. You want to be real. And the thing is, you know, blacks have been in this country as long as whites, and you can make the argument that these illegal aliens don't have a right to be here, but you can't make the argument that blacks don't have a right to be here. But you can make the argument that our present accommodation with the blacks, it's not working out well for us, which is the main thing, but also it's not really working out for them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're just are told by the media, you know, constantly how, you know, white supremacy is the biggest issue. So then they have to go out and find it, you know, and when it's not there. So that's the terrible conundrum.
So, I mean, it's important for whites to start thinking in terms of their own interests, because, you know, if you watch Tucker or whatever, it's almost impossible for any of these people to talk about things in terms of their own interest. You think of Trump in his speeches, always talking about Hispanic unemployment and black unemployment, this and that, never saying anything about whites. So we've been kind of programmed that it's evil for us to think about our own best interests. And so we always have to argue our positions based on the interests of non-whites. We always have to do that. And it's important for us to start thinking to say that, yes, we do have our own interests. Our own interests are legitimate, and here they are. That's important. But be that as it may, most people nowadays don't have, aren't capable of doing that yet. And I think we also have to have ready-made narratives for that don't rely on our interests, but rely on Black interests. It's a shame, but we do. And if you look at what's happened to the Blacks through the forced integration, well, okay, that we've had white flight, right? Everybody knows what white flight is. What about, I'm trying to think of a good term for this, but I was thinking today, sheepskin black flight. Now, sheepskin is an old-fashioned term for a diploma, so especially a college diploma. So you got that sheepskin. What are you going to do? You're going to leave the hood. And so there's been black flight from the black neighborhoods, the black flights of people who have the wherewithal to leave. And it's left the black neighborhoods devoid of the human resources necessary to maintain civilization, frankly.
Yeah.
So, and then I've mentioned this a couple of times, and I'm not an expert in it, but I think it was Senator James Eastland who was having a interview with Mike Wallace, the father of Chris Wallace, back around 1960. And James Eastland pointed out that a lot of the Jim Crow laws were passed under black governments during those few years after during Reconstruction, when whites had their voting rights stripped from them, you know, Confederates did. And, you know, with most men having served in the Confederate military, and women didn't vote anyway, it pretty effectively took away white voting rights. And so you had, in some states, you had these black-led governments. And they passed segregation laws in order to give the emerging black shopkeepers and black entrepreneurs and whatnot a captive audience, a captive clientele. And with integration, with desegregation of the lunch counters and the department stores and whatnot, these black shopkeepers lost their clientele and went out of business. And, you know, that hasn't worked out. And, you know, that's obvious. But then also with the ability of those college-educated blacks, even if their sheepskins are based on affirmative action and their employment is based on affirmative action, they have the wherewithal to leave. And they in the past, rather than being a diversity officer at a corporation, they might have been a shopkeeper or business person in their own community, and their community had businesses, and their community, you know, had local leaders. And now there's been a brain drain from the black community, from the hood. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and like what little people that, you know, could be leaders, such as people like Thomas Sowell and like Larry Elder and maybe Jesse Lee Peterson. I like all them, but like they're plucked, and or maybe not plucked, but they, you know, I can't necessarily blame them, but you know, they want to move out of the hood.
Has Jesse Lee Peterson moved out of the hood?
I don't know. He still lives in LA, I think. I don't you'd have to ask him.
I know Thomas, Reverend James Manning, he's still in the hood. So you do have some people who stayed behind, although they're bad-mouthed by the media, right?
Yeah.
The platform.
The people that would be leaders of the black community, you know, they're not there for the black community. They're just, you know, if it were natural, they would stand up for their own people instead of, you know, just crying racism, I hate whitey all the time, that we have and see nowadays.
So there is a bit of a conundrum. So did you ever watch Tommy Sotomayor?
Yes, I'm familiar. I watched when Dr. Duke went on there.
Yeah, and then
and a few of his priors.
He came on Dr. Duke's show, and he's, you know, he's a capable person. He's pretty smart. Didn't always agree with his takes, but he's pretty smart. And I don't think he's living in the hood. right? I mean, actually, I thought he was living in a pretty nice place. I think he was in Arizona, but sometimes he showed the outside of his house, and it was very nice. He's doing very well for himself. And he's very critical of black women, just as, like, Andrew Anglin's very critical of white women. He's kind of like the flip side of Andrew Anglin, and he's very critical of black women. But you, so there's kind of a conundrum. So you got somebody like Tommy Sotomayor, for instance, who's, I guess he's capable of succeeding outside of the hood. And so he doesn't need the hood, but the hood needs him. You know what I mean? And it is a bit of a conundrum. So, yeah. the black elite, do you blame them for wanting to leave the hood rather than stay in it and be leaders of it?
I know. You really can't. I mean, if you think about it, it doesn't mean that we have to accept it, but if you are going to, you know, look at it outside the box, I mean, who wouldn't want to live a better life? It just seems like a natural thing for any animal or mammal at all.
And Don Advo's pointed out that it was when Coretta Scott King, when her hood became too dangerous for her, Oprah stepped in and bought her a condo in a white building, an otherwise white building.
Oh, yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, lovely. So that's the thing. But so to restrict blacks like Tommy Sotomayor or whomever, to restrict them to the black neighborhoods, well, that might seem pretty heavy-handed and wrong. Okay, but what's the alternative? I mean, what we have now is they are incentivized, and they're lured out. They're incentivized out. Somebody like Jesse Lee Peterson or Reverend Manning, who stays in, they're bad-mouthed almost as much as we are. And
yeah.
And so the incentives are for them to come out of the ones who have the wherewithal to come out of the black neighborhoods to get rather often meaningless jobs in corporate America, and then maybe marry a white woman and live outside of the or in many cases they're women, and those women, I don't know who they marry, probably not. Well, I mean, some of them wind up marrying black men. Some of them don't get married at all. But those are the incentives, and I'm not saying I have the solution, but I think as an observer, you have to say it's really decimated what's left of the black neighborhoods.
Yeah, yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, and it would be good to listen to people like Reverend Manning or Jesse Lee Peterson about what is needed
in the black communities. And when you are talking to somebody like this, especially maybe somebody like you had said in your prior years, you were, somewhat naive towards this subject. And I have found if you offer some kind of sympathy to them, like, listen, it's not necessarily your fault just because, like, you've been lied to. It's like, you think this because you're told that way. It's not your fault, like, that you were lied to, And I've had a lot of luck with reaching people that way. If you offer some kind of sympathy, because it's often just a fight for them, right? They think, no, I'm right and you're wrong. And if you can convince them, no, you've been lied to and it's not your fault. I've had a lot of luck with that.
Yeah, that's the thing, because when you're talking to somebody, this is somebody who may well have had these opinions that were foisted onto them, but that they clung to often for decades, and to let go of them is hard. I just remember I've mentioned it.
Yeah.
Often I guess was I talking about it today with Richard Carey, I'm not sure, but just sitting on the floor listening to My Awakening, as I just listening to something as I was cleaning out my office, and having to let go of the egalitarian notions that I clung to. But the thing is, it doesn't mean I don't have hostility towards blacks. Now I will be careful. I have a black friend once, and this was before My Awakening, And he was going to take me to a car auction. I'd never been to a car auction, and he had been to a bunch. And so he said, well, let's go. But, you know, we have to go in one car because if you're buying in a car, you're going to be driving home the other car. So we were going to go in his car. And so I said, okay, well, I'll come to your house, and then we can go in your car. He said, no, you're not coming to my house. You can't come to my neighborhood. You wouldn't last long. And, you know, we have to kind of accept reality the way it is.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll be back after the break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Xtendivite 7 herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Xtendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Xtendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Xtendivite may just be for you. Xtendivite is an all-natural supplement. Xtendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with
Xtendivite. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher-certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future. And we are back, and Filbert is an awesome musician. And
well, thank you.
Yeah, and we should have recorded some music. I guess you were a little bit guitar short. You had your guitars elsewhere, but at any rate, one of these days we'll get together and record some music.
Yeah, look forward to that.
You have a song, a parody song, Give Me All Your Goyim.
Yes, Give Me All Your Goyim. It's a parody of ZZ Top's Give Me All Your Lovin', which I love ZZ Top. So, like, it's not like I'm making fun of ZZ Top. It's actually really fun recording this song because, you know, you get to record a ZZ Top song and then just put funny Jew lyrics over it. So that's what we did. And there's a line in there that we did says, give me all your goyim on all their guns and ammo too. So I thought that was very appropriate. And we recorded this probably close to 3 years ago. And so gun control, here we are. And it's only going to get better.
And here's that song, and I'll be back. Thanks, Philbert. I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
For 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.